Duncan McLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast brought to you today by Revix. Revix is a crypto specialist that offers access to gold, Bitcoin, and other assets through crypto bundles. I'm joined now by Sean Sanders, the CEO of Revix, to chat about the company and what it does. Sean, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Duncan. Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
Sean, tell me a bit about yourself. What's your background and how did Revix come about?
Sure. So my background, I come from a world of finance and I worked at a specialty investment group in Johannesburg. They landed up actually becoming our first investor, that's Sabvest. And I worked there for 3 years. I then moved to a family office based in the United Kingdom. I worked there for a short while before moving over to a venture capital firm based in Cape Town. And while I was at the venture capital firm, I was meeting loads and loads of really passionate, intelligent entrepreneurs. And it was quite interesting. I mean, a lot of people really do want to be in the VC seat. They want to be able to meet these really smart, innovative guys. And there was just something that was just kind of getting to me because I wanted to be on the other side of the table. Mm-hmm. And I guess I was there for a year and a bit, and I used that period to learn a lot about what didn't work for these guys in startups, because every startup's got a story where it's like, I can't believe we did that. And it's that I can't believe you did that story, and being able to kind of piece those all together that I think actually landed up being one of our big strengths with Revix. So after spending a year there and coming from the world of finance, I did my honors dissertation at UCT, focusing on the active versus passive ETF industry. Not exactly the most riveting stuff.
But it's exchange traded funds, right?
Yeah, exchange traded funds. But there's this new, well, back then, I suppose there was this emergence of actively traded by an active fund manager, trading the stocks within a fund vehicle that then could trade on an exchange and that be actively traded as well. So you had this passive versus active ETF debate that was emerging. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate enough to kind of be in the thick of that. And then when you saw this boom happen in the crypto space in 2017, there was rampant speculation. I mean, I'm sure you remember back to those times, everyone was talking about Bitcoin and how ICOs were the next big thing and how the whole world was going to change because of crypto. And at the time I turned to my business partner and I said, listen, at that point in time, there was a good friend of mine. And I said, listen, there's a big opportunity to essentially mimic what is going on in the traditional financial space, which is the move from active to passive investment funds or mm-hmm. ETFs mm-hmm. and essentially introduce that in the crypto space. Not only does that help essentially reduce the amount of trading that's going on because it allows people to take a longer term approach, but you can actually diversify yourself across a variety of different cryptocurrencies. You don't need to be making bets on just Bitcoin or Ethereum or Ripple. And that's really kind of what got Revix going, was that idea and saying there's a better way to invest in this asset class of cryptocurrencies. And as we started going down that route, we realized, oh, wow, this rabbit goes deep. These guys in the crypto space are actually onto something. Mm-hmm. And I think it's when the penny drops, and I mean, I'm sure you've spoken with the very interesting crypto heads that are totally behind the idea that crypto is going to completely change the world. The monetary system as we know it today is dead.
Yeah. And the libertarian view.
Yeah, the libertarian view, totally. And fortunately or unfortunately, I think the deeper you go down this rabbit hole, the more you start to believe in that. You start to believe that there is a better way that the financial system can operate, and maybe something about blockchain, AI, automated finance, that can come together and really create something new and innovative. And that's now driving Revix forward to a few interesting things that we're getting up to. And I mean, before I even get into that, Revix offers a variety of investment bundles right now. So we allow you to buy just like a passive ETF, you can buy a bundle of cryptocurrencies. So you could buy, let's say, the top 10, that's our flagship product. And just like the JSE top 40, you can own the top 10 cryptocurrencies equally weighted in our top 10 bundle. Mm-hmm. And what's really neat is that this bundle gets rebalanced every single month, which means that if you own one of the cryptocurrencies in your bundle that have to decline in value and fall out of the top 10, we would remove it from the bundle. And if one of the cryptocurrencies that increased in value and moved within the top 10, we would automatically include that in the bundle for you. So that's what's really about our top 10 bundle. We've got two theme-based bundles, and people immediately go like, what are you talking about? Theme-based bundles, what is that? And just like in the stock market, you've got themes within the crypto space. So you've got some cryptocurrencies which are looking to replace money as we know it today. And that is, you've got Bitcoin, you've got Ripple, you've got Litecoin. And these are the cryptocurrencies that are buying for this new age of money. And that is what we do is we essentially bundle those together and we include them in a payment bundle. So our payment bundle is a theme-based bundle, which gives you exposure to the top 5 payment-focused cryptocurrencies. Then we've got one other theme-based bundle, and this is a smart contract or platform bundle. And what this does, and I mean, this is probably the most nerdy or crypto head focused bundle. It's the most enthusiast oriented bundle. And what this does is provide exposure to the smart contract oriented cryptocurrencies. So these are the cryptocurrencies like Ethereum, EOS, NEO, Cardano that are looking to create kind of the blockchain infrastructure to be able to build smart contracts and decentralized applications on top of. So as a wild example, maybe you want to rent out your computer space or your computer storage space to somebody else and earn some income for doing that. And there is a cryptocurrency, there's quite a few different cryptocurrency projects out there that are looking to create that. And that essentially is an application that is decentralized. It is not controlled by any one party. And essentially these smart contract cryptocurrencies are looking to offer that. So those are the 3 bundles that we have on our platform. And then we allow you to buy directly into Bitcoin. It's the granddaddy in the crypto space. Everyone knows about Bitcoin. So we obviously offer that. And then we offer a very interesting tokenized gold offering through Pax Gold, which has been newly released and has seen, obviously, given the interesting time that we're in.
Sean, what is tokenized gold?
So tokenized gold, I guess people get so caught up on tokenized anything. It is essentially a gold bar that is sitting in a London accredited vault that is fully insured, that has a serial number on it, and they've taken, well, essentially Paxos, which is based in New York, they own New York Trust Company, they've gone along and said, okay, each one of these gold bars are worth 32,000 tokens, and they've tokenized this asset. So asset tokenization is probably one of the next big waves that we're going to see in the crypto space, and that you'll see, well, not just in the crypto space, I suppose, in the more general investing space. And you've already sort of seen this with fractionalizing investment into shares. So by having fractionalized investing into shares, you are tokenizing a share. You're breaking a share up into a variety of different units. And just the same way as you can take a bar of gold and you can break that up into a variety of different units and then put that on a blockchain. And I'm hesitant to even say that because people get so caught up and scared when they hear, oh God, it's on a blockchain, that doesn't really make sense. But it's not that complicated. Really all it does is you've taken a token, so a representation of ownership, of legal ownership of a gold bar, and you put that onto the Ethereum blockchain, and now you can invest in it. And if you want to buy or sell tokenized gold, I mean, you can invest on a platform for as little as 500 Rand. You could buy a fraction of a token of Pax Gold. And if you want to sell in 5 minutes or in 5 years' time, you're welcome to do that. And you can trade with anyone around the world. And that's the big beauty of tokenized gold versus just trading, let's say, on the JSE.
It's not a concept I've really come across before, Sean. So if I earn 32,000 tokens in this gold that's sitting in New York, did you say, or London? Do I technically own that gold?
Yeah, so that's actually what the token represents, is the legal ownership. And this is what people get caught up with Bitcoin or Ethereum or any of the other cryptocurrencies. It's like, how do you own that? Well, if you have the private key, which gives you access to be able to move that asset around, that is the legal ownership. Okay. So breaking that down a little bit further is you've got the London gold bar, and it is based in London. So that is sitting in a vault in London. You've then got a New York trust company called Paxos that are fully licensed and accredited. And what they've done is they said, okay, we believe that tokenizing assets and tokenizing securities and putting them on blockchains is the way that we want to do things. We think that's more efficient. And we at Revix obviously agree with that. And we've decided, okay, well, we think that our first foray into tokenized, and really it's a tokenized commodity more than anything else, our first foray into non-crypto oriented products is to still use a cryptocurrency, namely the Ethereum blockchain, but to have an asset that runs on top of it. And that's what Pax Gold is.
Okay. And so Pax Gold's value, is it tied to the gold price, or is it trading freely? Obviously, there'll be a correlation with the gold price.
Yeah, so it's got a 98% correlation. I mean, it only launched last year, September. So since the launch in September, it's got a 98% correlation to the gold price, to the US spot gold price, that is. And I mean, there is moments because there isn't the sort of liquidity with Pax Gold. And when I say there isn't the sort of liquidity, if you wanted to invest $1 million in Pax Gold, you would be able to move the price. If you're investing a couple hundred thousand Rand, you're not going to be able to move the price. But there is moments when you see that the price of Pax Gold will either be slightly higher or slightly lower than the spot price of gold, but it generally corrects very quickly. And the market makers in the space move in very quickly to let's align that price.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're living in an interesting time. I mean, we've got the COVID-19 pandemic raging around the world right now. Stock markets in the US at record levels, which is just bizarre, given everything else that's going on. But certainly a lot of uncertainty, a lot of instability. And gold has obviously always been seen as a store of value in times of uncertainty. And we're seeing that again now the price of gold rising. I haven't looked at it in recent days, but I know it has been on the move. Consumers who are looking to safeguard their money, I think in these sort of times have traditionally looked at gold. Do you think cryptocurrencies are also becoming some sort of store of value during times of uncertainty? And if so, where should people be looking? Should they be investing in gold or in Bitcoin or in both?
I mean, our view at Revix, and I match this view, is that you should have a diversified portfolio. It's boring. It's not something that I think a lot of people want to hear. They want to hear to get rich quick.
Yeah.
If you're investing in crypto, our viewpoint is take a long-term view. Yeah. So I'll tackle the crypto question and then I'll move on to gold separately.
Okay.
If you want to invest in crypto and you really want to make money, don't try speculate over days or weeks. Try take a long-term view, because if crypto actually turns out to be something, and Bitcoin does challenge the $1 trillion remittance market, or if Bitcoin really does challenge the way that we do peer-to-peer payments or anything like that, if there's even another payment-oriented cryptocurrency that comes into that space and is able to kind of dent the current market, you're going to see a cryptocurrency asset class growth that is many multiples of what it is today. And I think that's really the big opportunity. And that isn't a 1, 2, or 3 year opportunity, because just like what we've had with tech and how tech became such a kind of mainstay everyday item in our life, that takes time. I think that's going to take decades. It will happen gradually and then all at once, right? That's the saying. And you can't really time this market. You have to kind of dollar cost average or rand cost average in. And that's our approach with investing in cryptocurrency. Invest a small amount every single month and do not bet the kitchen sink on it. Don't go and, you know, take out a second bond in the house. Don't go and invest what you can't lose. And that's our approach with crypto. Invest over the long term. Kind of just be responsible with your money on that front. Every financial advisor, I think, would have a very similar sort of strategy when it comes to investing in any asset class, not just cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. With gold is, you know, it's one of these top investments when everything else seems to go down. And strangely, I mean, gold's now at what, an 8-year high? It's $1,770 at the time we're talking now, and it's been bouncing between the $1,700 to $1,800 mark for quite some time. Stock market's at all-time highs. There's this very big disconnect between your everyday investor, or as they say, like your Wall Street versus kind
Main Street.
Main Street. Yeah. So there's a big, very big disconnect between the two. Gold is the kind of smug insurance. It's what happens if this financial system actually does kind of get ahead of itself. I mean, I kind of lost track how much money's been printed over the last while. I've been on a few other podcasts where the stats I had were $6 trillion, and then the 2 weeks later when I looked, it was $7 trillion in global wealth that had been created through quantitative easing and equivalent measures and whatnot. And then it just seems to have escalated. And by the end of the year, I think they're projecting that it's going to be $10 trillion that has just been created. I mean,
unbelievable. And a lot of that's coming from the United States. What amazes me, and I had Vinny Lingham, is also well known in the crypto in crypto circles, on the podcast a couple of months ago, and we were having a very interesting conversation about money printing in most countries leads to inflation, but that's not happening in America, which is really interesting. Possibly he suggested because the dollar is the world's reserve currency.
I suppose that's now as well, right? I mean, inflation doesn't happen at the click of a finger. It does take time. And I think that's the other big risk here is, okay, so we see a recovery. COVID is dealt with in whichever way, whether that be through a vaccine or whether that be through just, you know, herd immunity or whatever the story may be. And then in 2 or 3 years' time, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. The genie's out. Money's been printed. He has a staggering stat. I mean, you've got the world value of gold, and this jumps around obviously with the price of gold, but it ranges between, and it depends on obviously the source that you look at, but between $9 and $11 trillion in global value of gold, right? And you've just printed that. Mm-hmm. You, as central banks around the world, without having a gold standard, have gone and just printed essentially the world's value of gold, which is absolutely staggering. And I think that's the risk, is that, okay, well, I mean, now we obviously able to support businesses, we're buying corporate debt, we doing everything we need to do on that front to keep the economy going and keep people employed, which is all amicable. But later on, what is the impact? Do you start seeing inflation in the US move up to 5 or 10%? Like, how does this all unravel? And I think that's where there's a big opportunity for both crypto and for gold, because, you know, gold obviously acts as an inflationary hedge. We haven't seen crypto operate in an environment where there's high inflation. But if you're looking at the similarities between just Bitcoin, not necessarily the rest of the cryptocurrency market, but just Bitcoin and gold, I think you're seeing more in common than you're not seeing in common.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of people are seeing as well, with institutional wealth moving into Bitcoin in particular.
Yes.
I mean, that's been quite staggering this year alone.
Okay. So the big institutions are still investing big time in the crypto space. I know there was a lot to talk about that last year. It's still going on, is it?
I think it's accelerated. And I say, I think it's accelerated because these stats seem to come out 6 or 12 months later from the big players like Grayscale, Galaxy Digital. Mm-hmm. But I mean, certainly on our platform, the number of high net worth individuals that have said, listen, I want to have 2 to 5% of my portfolio in crypto. Mm-hmm. And they'll put some in Bitcoin, they'll put some in our top 10 bundle, they'll spread it out in the different theme-based options we have. But that's their approach to diversification, right? Because it seems, and I mean, this is the other interesting thing, is that during this last market drop, when there was this panic selling, you saw gold, Bitcoin, like the whole entire crypto market, stocks, bonds, everything just seemed to go through the floor. Mm-hmm. And then that all seemed to be increasing together. So you've seen this correlation event happen where everything seems to have become more correlated than less correlated. So there's even a greater search for uncorrelated assets. And I think there's been a significant amount of interest solely based on the diversification benefits of crypto.
Interesting. So you mentioned your bundles, which get rebalanced. Was it monthly?
Yes, monthly.
Monthly. Explain how that works exactly.
Sure. So this is quite an interesting project that we've been working on, and we're going to continue working on as we build out Revix and into other asset classes and all the rest. But our bundles aren't like your Satrix top 40 fund. We don't offer a fund structure. When you actually invest with us, you own the top 10 cryptocurrencies in our top 10 bundle, or one of our two theme bundles, you actually own the cryptocurrencies that are within that bundle. So that would be like owning NASPERS instead of owning 20% of the JSE top 40, if that makes sense.
Right. Yes.
So you've got direct ownership, and this is known as direct indexing. Now, direct indexing has grown and it's used in high net worth individuals' portfolios. So if you're wanting to create a model portfolio for a high net worth individual, and they wanted to buy, let's say, the S&P 500, but they didn't want to have any oil stocks or any, I don't know, let's say telecoms or whatever involved in that, you could essentially create this model portfolio that excludes those, and you could buy directly the underlying companies. Now, we've done that in the crypto space, and we've decided that that's a more efficient way to be able to get exposure to the cryptocurrency market. And that means that on a monthly basis, if we want to rebalance your bundle, which we do automatically for our customers, all we have to do is essentially buy and sell the fractions or the percentage amount of each crypto to get that bundle back to its equal weighting at the end of the month. So that's one of our biggest advantages, because we want to make investing for the average person that wants to get exposure to the crypto space as easy as possible. So to make investing an effortless experience and to stay up to date with the market means that every single month we'll run an algorithm. That algorithm will say, okay, so over this month, let's say if you're in the top 10 bundle, Bitcoin's increased in value more than Litecoin and more than Ripple. Let's buy some Ripple, let's buy some Litecoin, let's sell some Bitcoin, and we'll automatically do that for you. And on a monthly basis, we charge a 0.17% fee for doing that, which works out to about a 2% fee per year, which if you compare that, I mean, given the rebalancing frequency and how closely you can then track the market, that works out fairly comparable to other JSE listed funds in terms of the rebalancing frequency. I mean, JSE funds are slightly cheaper, don't get me wrong. But in terms, I mean, they rebalance either quarterly or semi-annually normally.
Okay. And do you have any control over exposure to particular cryptos, or is it all managed managed from your end? I mean, can you say I'd prefer to have more exposure to smart contract crypto assets like Ethereum, for example?
No, so not yet. That is something that we'll be looking to roll out in 2021.
Okay.
So we're probably saying that. I mean, it's like we've run through this year so quickly. Yeah. But no, we at this point in time just provide direct exposure to either the top 10 or one of the two themes in the crypto space. Mm-hmm. And with our rebalancing every single month as well, we are able to kind of smooth the amount of fees that you pay as well. So what we can do with this essentially is that if a cryptocurrency has just fallen, so let's say it's only declined by 2%, And that means that it's moved out of the top 10 cryptocurrencies, but only fractionally out. Mm-hmm. What's the point of rebalancing, right? Why should we incur an additional fee for you? And why should we rebalance the portfolio without having to actually see what, whether or not this actually has declined significantly in value and remove it?
Yeah.
So what we do then is essentially evaluate using an algorithm. All of this is rules based. And using an algorithm, we'll say, right, this has declined slightly in value, but it hasn't declined enough. Keep it within the bundle. And that's another one of the smart rules that we have.
So how do you determine the weightings in say, the top 10 bundle? Is it based on the market capitalization of each crypto?
So this is something that we debated this just when we started Revix to no end. Because if you have to create market capitalization weighted bundles, you would have Bitcoin and Ethereum pretty much make up most of the bundle.
Yes.
So what's the point of then investing in bundles? You want to, when you invest in a bundle, you want to diversify across the asset class. And in order to do that, what we said is that an equally weighted bundle will be a better option for you than a market weighted bundle.
Okay.
So over the month, so from the first of the month to the end of the month, the cryptocurrencies within your bundle will track the movements in the market. But when you rebalance, every single cryptocurrency in your top 10 bundle will equal 10% each.
Oh, wow.
So it'll move back to being equally weighted.
And looking back now, which is the better model? Would you have outperformed with that 10% weighting per crypto versus following the market capitalizations of these cryptos?
So that's entirely dependent on the time period that you look at. So if you look at 5 years, I mean, equal weighting just absolutely demolishes a market weighted approach. If you look at over the last 1 or 2 years, I mean, any period of time when you've seen Bitcoin outperform, then a market weighted bundle would outperform.
Yeah.
Because it would make up more than 70% of that bundle's weight. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you have seen Bitcoin, and it's called Bitcoin dominance in the crypto space.
Yeah.
But the amount or the percentage that Bitcoin makes up of the overall crypto market, you've seen that gradually decline over time. And our assumption is that over time, you're going to see other cryptocurrencies start buying for their top spots or start competing against the likes of Ripple, the likes of Litecoin, the likes of Bitcoin for the top spots. And you kind of want to provide equal exposure to each of those, because in the crypto space, you really don't know what is going to succeed in the long term.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of really interesting things going on in the background with Ethereum. There's a few upgrades to the actual protocol itself. And I mean, the amount of developer work that's being done just linking the financial world to the smart contract or blockchain world is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, we spoke earlier about Pax Gold, and Pax Gold is a gold token. So the legal ownership of gold has been put on to the Ethereum blockchain, and now you can transact with anyone around the world and buy and sell gold. I mean, that's remarkable. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine in South Africa, you're sitting here and you've got the JSE, which is a fixed exchange, which allows you to trade during certain times. And then there's this other thing, which is settlement versus execution, which a lot of people don't really realize is such a big factor. I mean, when you decide to, let's say, buy a gold ETF in South Africa, you've got, well, let's say you buy the gold ETF and you decide to sell that gold ETF the same day. You have got a execution that happens on that day, but settlement actually only happens 2 days later, which means that you've got a 2-day delay before you're actually able to withdraw your funds and maybe invest in another investment or move your money elsewhere. Now with Pax Gold, you don't have that, which is a very big benefit to tokenized assets. You've removed all these middlemen, because why do they have 2 days of settling this trade? It should be instantaneous. I mean, stock markets are definitely moving towards that, but they're lagging digital innovation that you're seeing in the crypto space. So in the future, and this is what I think really gets me excited about the future of Revix and the future of tokenized assets and security tokens and all the rest, is that you're gonna see a lot more assets move onto the likes of the Ethereum blockchain, the EOS blockchain, the Tron blockchain. And these won't be assets as we maybe know them today. So sure, gold's a very simple and understandable example. But if you have to then think out to, okay, well, we want to raise money in Cape Town, just as an example, obviously I'm in Cape Town right now, we want to raise money, and how can we do that? So currently you issue some bonds and you'd have some sophisticated investors, institutions, pension funds, et cetera, they'll go and they'll buy these bonds. But in the future, we can be a little bit more creative as well. In the future, we can decide, well, let's tokenize the future income stream of Table Mountain. So let's sell a future income stream just of Table Mountain to everyday retail investors, perhaps the people in the city. And you can decide to do that through tokens that are created. Now they're security tokens and they represent a future income stream. But how's that for just a completely new way of unlocking value and being able to raise capital and all the rest?
The people of Cape Town might have something to say about that. I wanted to ask you, how's the regulatory situation in South Africa shaping up around cryptocurrencies? I know the Reserve Bank has been doing some work in this area and there are various industry working groups as well. How are you as a player in the space being regulated currently, and what would you like to see happening in the regulatory space in South Africa?
Oh, this is the one area we've been begging for regulation for the last 2 years. And I think all the big crypto players across the board have been begging for regulation. Just tell us how we're supposed to conduct AML, KYC checks, et cetera, on customers. How are we supposed to custody customer funds? And the regulators, because it is such a new asset class and it works so differently to what they currently have, they've had to move slow. So, I mean, I understand both sides of this. I understand from a regulator side, you do not want to make very fast moves and therefore destroy industries or perhaps, you know, provide loopholes that criminals can then move through. And on our side, I mean, my word, I would have loved regulation 2 years ago because it allows us to go to various marketing agencies, various marketing publications and say like, listen, we are a real business. We're not the shady, you know, crypto of early 2010. We are 2020's crypto, which is slightly more grown up, a little bit more mature. And, you know, unfortunately, there isn't yet any regulations. We operate in South Africa and the United Kingdom. There isn't yet regulations in South Africa or the United Kingdom. There is AML and KYC, so that's anti-money laundering and know your customer compliance requirements that are being introduced into the United Kingdom. And we will be complying with that as soon as that actually goes into law, which will be from January next year. However, South Africa is still kind of sitting on the fence, waiting, I think, for a little bit more clarity from the crypto community in South Africa, as well as the international community as well before they put forward any regulations.
Okay, so
unfortunately, yeah, we're sitting in a space where we're not regulated. We're having to try act as a regulated entity.
Yeah.
And you know, you can get audited, you can do whatever you want, but if you're not regulated, it doesn't matter. You can't go to brokerages, you can't go to endowments, pension funds, etc. and say to them, listen, invest in us, invest in the products that we have, etc.
Yeah, interesting. So I guess you, you're just going to have to comply with what you think the regulations are going to be eventually.
Yeah. Sorry, you broke up there for a moment.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, the internet seems to be a little bit flaky. I was just saying you have to act like you're already a regulated entity and anticipate what those regulations might say once they're produced.
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, you're dealing with people's money, right? And if you do one thing wrong, if you aren't on the ball all the time and you're not protecting not just the money, but I suppose personal information as well, you've got no chance of being able to make it in the space over the long term.
Yeah.
And I mean, that is something where you would see, I think, a lot more of the top crypto players. So the very well-known platforms in South Africa, the very well-known platforms overseas. I mean, I've spoken with all their compliance teams, whether it be through us working with them, because naturally we work through them where they are our exchanges. And we trade on them and we work with them from a compliance standpoint. And I mean, they are operating like banks. They're operating very tight shops, but they don't have a regulatory stamp of approval, which means that you're paying 5 times more for bank accounts. It means that certain providers refuse to work with you. It's a little bit frustrating. I mean, you can't market or advertise on your two biggest distribution channels, which are Facebook and Google, because you're a crypto business. You're not regulated. In some jurisdictions, they're throwing you into the bucket of gambling and of gaming, obviously. And you turn to the regulator and go like, you guys must be kidding. I mean, this is an investment product. How are we not regulated by the FSB? South Africa, that is.
Interesting. I wanted to come back to the beginning of our conversation, Sean, because you mentioned that you are backed by and you have an investment from SabVest, which is a JSE listed investment holding company led by, I believe, Chris Seabrook. Chris, I've run across in business on a number of occasions. He's been on boards of many tech companies in South Africa over the years. But what is SabVest exactly? What do they do and how did you get involved with them?
Sure. So my first job out of university a little while ago was working with SabVest. So Chris Seabrook was my first boss, my first mentor. And I mean, he is one of the most remarkable men I think you'll ever meet. The fact that he could work as in be the CEO and run SabVest amongst being on the boards of more than a dozen companies across South Africa and not just small companies, you're talking big listed companies. is absolutely remarkable. And he is the most efficient individual I've ever met. He's the most hardworking individual I've ever met. So yeah, for a good period of time, I mean, he was kind of showing me the ropes, getting me acquainted with the business world and how to do things efficiently. And yeah, when I approached him, I mean, I wasn't necessarily looking for a very big investment. We approached them, we approached Sadvest 2.5 years ago to get our first seed round of investment. And Chris said, yes, you know, we'll back you. We'll provide, and at that point in time, it was only 3 million rand. Well, I say only 3 million rand because naturally, as you can understand, building a business in the financial space, I mean, regulations alone eat that up. Trying to be regulated, that is, eats that up. So Chris was our first investor, and I am very grateful for Sadvest to have assisted us to get going. And then shortly after that, Sadvest increased their equity stake in the business, and they provided additional capital. And shortly, within the next few weeks, we will be able to announce a new investment as well from another listed company based in South Africa, which is quite exciting. And that's going to open up a lot of doors for us. So I'm very excited about the opportunities and the future ahead.
Excellent. Excellent stuff. So there's two of you who founded the business, right? Who's your partner in crime?
So yeah, my ex-partner in crime, actually, Louis Bass, helped me start Revix. He is a bit of a whiz kid, to be honest. He started several businesses after finishing university. So actually, let me take a step back. He was a mechatronic engineering student, and then that was a little bit, you know, boring. Like, you know, why just do mechatronic engineering?
Mechatronic engineering. I haven't heard that before. What does mechatronic mean?
Honestly, I don't think I ever got to understand exactly what
it was. It sounds like one of those things that you're not easily going to understand. Yeah.
So he was doing that, but that wasn't enough. So he needed to do computer science at UCT as well. So ended up doing computer science and mechatronic engineering alongside each other. Finished up at UCT, started several businesses. He is one of the most classic entrepreneurs you'll ever meet. He started several businesses. Most of them were colossal failures, but his final business before getting involved with Revix was a company called Carry. Carry landed up getting sold to Nedbank for a fair amount of money. So when I first spoke with him, and I mean, we were good friends at university and we were good friends after university. When I first spoke to him, I said, like, listen, if there's anybody that's going to have experience in starting businesses, it's you. So, you know, I'll definitely want you on board. You know, let's build this together. And I think, you know, he is now running a business called Delta Labs. And Delta Labs, or I keep butchering the name, it's either Delta Labs or Delta Studio. So apologies, Louis, if you're listening to this. But Delta Studio is a business that creates other businesses. They are a venture incubator, a venture builder. And about a year ago, Louis and I decided that, you know, Louis is fantastic at starting businesses, but it isn't his thing to be running them. So we decided that he can focus on the Delta. Delta helped to build our initial product and our initial platform, and I would continue on with Revix and, you know, grow this business.
Okay, excellent. Well, Sean, I think we're gonna wrap it there. But let me ask you a final question. It's been with COVID and everything else that's going on in 2020. I suppose it's an interesting time to be running a startup. Maybe take us through how you feel the COVID-19 pandemic and everything else that's happening this year is going to affect the industry that you're in, and how it's maybe changed your plans and what where you see Revix going in the coming 3 to 5 years, say.
So we are very fortunate. We are an online-only business, which means that we're not impacted like the hospitality or leisure industries, which I'm incredibly grateful for. I mean, we actually saw an increase because we launched Pax Gold about 2.5 weeks before the COVID outbreak really got serious. And, you know, markets were going through the floor, and people then were actually, you know, when I guess there was a floor and the market started increasing again, you know, people were desperate for gold. So we were fortunate enough to be in that position. We had just launched a new product that the market was really interested in. So we landed up seeing the benefit of that. So from an operational standpoint, personally, Revix is actually had its best few months ever, which I feel kind of guilty saying, given that, you know, there's so many of my very good friends that have had to actually close down their businesses, and watching that experience has probably been the most petrifying thing I've ever seen in my entire life. That is probably my biggest fear is, you know, having to sit in front of your team and tell them, like, listen, guys, the lights are going to be turned off in X amount of time. Like, I'm sorry, you've put in all this hard work and effort, but this is kind of the facts. And, you know, it's not anybody's fault in particular. It's kind of the economy and what's gone on, and you know, not being able to actually serve customers. It doesn't matter how good of a business leader or entrepreneur you are, you're not able to operate, and you obviously have to shut down. So I think, you know, personally, what we have felt is we are a business that gobbles up money. We are an expensive business to run. You've got a lot of senior developers, you've got security specialists, you've got compliance, you've got all of that that is required. So it's not a cheap operation to run, which means that we have to consistently, on a rolling 6-month basis, raise capital. Mm-hmm. And raising capital is definitely going to become more difficult. It's become more difficult, but I think that's going to increase over time. That difficulty is going to become more and more difficult, more and more challenging. So I think that that's probably the biggest risk in the startup space right now, is that people are a little bit more hesitant about the future. They are not necessarily going to put a little bit more money into a Section 12J fund. Mm-hmm. And that filters down to then startups being funded in South Africa. Internationally, there's a lot of tax incentive schemes as well that incentivize high net worth individuals to invest in startups. That again filters through the venture capital ecosystem down into the startups. And I think a lot of that's going to dry up. A lot of corporates have had to tighten their belts, and corporates have a lot of incubators and accelerator programs. That's going to impact startups. So I can only really talk about what I'm seeing and experiencing. And I think the funding side of things will be the most hard hit over the next while. So that's probably my biggest takeaway about kind of where things are and probably the biggest risk going forward as a startup. Running a business, I think it doesn't matter if you're running a business or if you're an employee at a business right now, it is incredibly uncertain times. And it's a bit nerve-wracking, but I'm very hopeful over the next 6 to 12 months that there will be a normality again. There will be some version of normality again, and this will become something of the past. It'll become a 2009-like financial crisis, except for a little bit bigger, a little bit, you know, with the volume turned up from 3 to 10. Mm-hmm. We'll return to a new world that I suppose is going to be a little different to what we have today.
Well, you are raising additional capital, so at least Revix is flying forward by the sounds of it. And I look forward to hearing the news about who this listed company is that's investing in you. But let's wrap it there. Sean Sanders is co-founder and CEO of Revix. Thanks so much for talking to Tech Central today.
Fantastic. Thank you, Duncan. Have a great day.